Taking a look now at the latest in farm technology with Charles Crave, one of the four Crave brothers who farm together at Waterloo, Wisconsin. And the brothers are going to be hosting one of the largest outdoor ag expositions in the upper Midwest, Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. Used to be called Farm Progress Days, but now it's Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. And it's going to be held July 21st through the 23rd. Probably 100,000 people are going to be visiting that farm. And Charles Crave, our guest. Charles, you're going to be a busy guy out there.
Boy, I don't think I can get much busier than I am right now. We're really looking forward to hosting the show. We've had an incredible, incredible committee developing this show for Dodge County. Terrific chairman. Communications have been excellent. So it's been a real pleasure for us to step forward and assist with this effort.
Well, I tell you what, you have an amazing farm, and I want to give our listeners some background on the farm. You have four brothers.
That's
running
right.
That operation.
Yeah. By the grace of God, there's still four of us there running the farm.
Yeah that's it. And it started with, talk about how it got started.
Well, we had been raised on a farm in Beloit, and we didn't really have a farm right there to go back home to. So one thing led to the other, and we formed a partnership with a dairy science professor who had an interest in investing in a farm. So we're the students who went farming with their dairy science professor, and we had a partnership, and we rented a farm. So we started at stroke of midnight, March 1st, 1978, with 43 cows on a rented farm, and all my clothes were in the back seat of a used car, and we've been going ever since. And we've grown the operation, brought in two other brothers, and bought out our former partner, and evolved into the operation we have today.
Give us a sense for the size of the operation.
Well, since our four primary families, we've developed certain areas of expertise, and we've grown the operation to reflect those areas. So the farm encompasses approximately 1,700 acres of crops, which are raised. All of those crops are fed to the livestock. It involves a dairy herd, as well as the raising of the young female animals. So we have approximately 2,000 head of livestock on the farm. We milk 875 cows three times a day through a modern milking parlor. And then to add value to that milk, we have a cheese factory. So we pump the milk from the milking parlor underground to the cheese factory where we manufacture specialty cheeses. Then on the other end of the operation, there is a manure digester, which digests the manure, and the methane gas from that digestion produces power to create electricity. So we have several primary focuses to the entire operation.
And this is really one of your big thrusts has been concern and caring for the environment. And I think that's reflected in how you've got your operation set up.
Well, thanks. Some of it's just kind of common sense if you can save a dollar or two over the long haul. But the other thing is just kind of taking a good look. You know, we've got wonderful natural resources, and we want to be good stewards of those resources. So sometimes you have to step up with your checkbook or with your education, and we've tried to develop the whole operation to reflect good, sound stewardship.
Talking with Charles Crave today about the latest in agricultural technology and the Crave Brothers Farm hosting the Farm Technology Days. A question about the farm or about the farming operation or about Farm Technology Days, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Let's talk about that cheese factory, because you guys are producing some award-winning cheeses there.
Right. It's really been an incredible journey. About 9, 10 years ago, we started talking about trying to add value or what we wanted to do to modernize or expand or what's the next step for the farm operation. And we decided to add value to our milk. So we looked into various types of products and decided upon the cheese factory. So we put in a very modern cheese factory, which allows us to produce fresh mozzarella products. So unlike aged products, which are a reflection of the aging process, with a fresh cheese product, such as fresh mozzarella, they're a real reflection of the quality of the milk and the manufacturing and the facilities and such. So by combining what we think is great quality milk and proper handling techniques of that milk to the cheese factory, and expanding that skill and artisanal efforts throughout the cheese factory, we've been developing an award-winning lineup of fresh mozzarella products, as well as three other product lines.
And one of the brothers is in charge of that part of the operation.
Right. My brother George is in charge of the cheese factory side of the business. We had our open house for that back in June of 2002 already, and we've undergone a couple of expansions since then, and really have what we feel right now is America's largest farmstead cheese factory.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's called, and the name of your cheese is?
Some of them is Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese.
Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese. Well, Jim in Greenfield has a comment or question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning, Larry, and good morning to your guests. I guess, have nothing but a comment, and maybe if your guests could comment on my comment. I recently read a book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, and I am a city boy who probably is as naive and ignorant about agriculture and farming as most city boys are, but was just fascinated and shocked, and just I felt like a huge set of barn doors were open to a world that not only did I know nothing about, but I felt like I needed to learn more and more about. And I'm trying to digest as much about agriculture today as I can. But, you know, has your guest read the book? Is he aware of that new craze, I guess, and kind of turning back to some old-style farming? And the big thing for me is grass-fed versus corn-fed livestock, and how it's better for the animals and better for us and better for the environment. And I'm curious what his comments are on that.
All right, Jim, thanks for calling. Charles, do we have comments?
Sure, I can comment on that one. If you're going to use the comparison, our farm is not a grass-based farm. We do pasture our cattle. However, I think we have to take a look at this with some moderation or prudence. For instance, today it's going to be 95 and in the sun. If the cattle are out grazing, they might be dropping over before they would meet their caloric intake. In the wintertime, there's nothing to graze. So we have chosen to develop good, sound nutrition policies and programs to deliver good quality feed every day, year, throughout the year. Our cattle are comfortable. If you were to go in that barn, it would more resemble an air-conditioned building than it would be a pasture, much less standing under a tree in a pasture, swatting the flies. So what we read may have some truth to it. I think in reality, it's a combination of philosophies. And I challenge a lot of our listeners, not so much to take the challenge, but take the opportunity. Come on out to Farm Technology Days and see how a modern farm has developed and the comfort and the longevity and the lifespan of these cattle and the milk produced. Mm-hmm. There's a reason we can read those books here in America.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that reason is because we have economically priced food. We have an incredible delivery system. I can't think of anybody who's had tomato poisoning recently.
No.
And there's a reason that we can read and understand our food systems and whatever else we've really taken interest in, and that's because we do have a system that allows us to do more than just get by with the bare necessities.
You know, and I think that I really do hope many people come out to Farm Technology Days, because it's just a it's really an eye-opening experience to see the kind of operation that you've developed here. And let's talk about this as an example. Let's talk about that anaerobic manure digestion system that you guys have created and what it does.
All right. Well, by having the cattle raised in barns primarily rather than spending most of the year roaming the pastures, we're able to capture their manure. And like all manure or biological systems on Earth, bacteria will continue to break down and live on whatever it can in there. So the manure is captured. It is warmed to 100 degrees, just like our bodies are approximately 100 degrees. Bacteria lives on three things: food, moisture, and temperature. And that bacteria lives on the food in that environment, and when all bacteria on Earth die, they give off gas, and one of the primary gases is methane. So we capture that methane and use it to power an engine, similar to what you would have in a car. And that engine turns a generator, similar to what you would have in a power plant. And that generator puts the electricity onto the grid, which lights up the lights in the buildings we are sitting in today. So it's not a complicated system, but it takes a certain amount of volume, and it definitely takes a lot of energy and chutzpah to push those programs through.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are producing, talk about the amount of electricity you're producing on your farm.
Oh, it's 650 kilowatts around the clock. So that's enough for 550 homes. So you could take 550 homes, and this meets their peak power demands as well, and take them totally off the grid, and we would meet those power needs.
It'd be, and I know part of the Farm Technology Days, there are going to be special times during the day when those who are really interested, because I could see a lot of farmers taking advantage of this kind of a system, and they're going to have a chance for an in-depth look at that digester, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. There will be manure management tours as a separate breakout from the trade show area, so folks can go and see the digester up close, talk to the people who really put it in, and get a good in-depth look. There's also going to be more of a smattering type of opportunity for the general public. So there will be half-hour tram tours of the entire farming and cheese making and digester operation. But for those who really want to sink their teeth into anaerobic digestion, there will be several opportunities there at the show.
Yeah, that's great. Brett in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Brett, hello.
Hello, sir. I just want to comment. I drove out to, I'm a coach driver, and I took a couple tours out to the farm, and I was just totally impressed with the people and the common sense, and just really happy group of people out there were doing their thing, and also just amazed by how clean and beautiful the area is, and I got to do the tour myself, and it was just everybody on the bus. Where one group was a bunch of cheesemakers, another one was a bunch of farmers, and they were just totally impressed. And I just want to tell them to keep up the good, great work, and hopefully I get to see them on their expo. Thanks.
All right. Well, that's a nice comment for you, Chuck.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and I hope my wife is listening about that common sense comment there. We're still working on common ground, of course.
Thanks, Brett. That's really nice. And we'll take some more calls. Bob in Waukesha, we'll give you a chance next. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Charlie, if I can call you, this is Bob Franzi, a fellow Beloit Turner grad.
Sure.
Graduated with your sister Mary, and my family loves your string cheese, for example. But what I really wanted to ask you was, in the 21st century now, what sorts of challenges there are for family farmers compared to the corporate farming situation out there, and what you see as the future of family farming, both in Wisconsin, I guess, and nationwide?
All right. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Well, you know, there are some challenges, but I think they're perhaps just, I don't know if they've necessarily been magnified, but we need to be real about the challenges we're going to accept. So, for instance, when I would say, somebody says, I'd like to farm, and I say, all right, are you interested in farming on your own or being a key employee or a part owner of a larger operation? Those are all philosophical and psychological questions we need to answer with to ourselves and to our families. When we talk about corporate farms, there's only like 0.5% or something of the farms in the country that are really pure corporate farms. And a lot of folks kind of might call us a corporate farm, but, you know, if they're out there, they'll see the owner knee-deep, too, if need be. So I think the challenges are understanding ourselves, what our aptitudes and attitude is, and kind of positioning ourselves for where we want to go. For instance, I started on a rented farm. Mm-hmm. I saved my money. I dated cheap women. I bought an old car. So, you know, are we willing to save our money? Are we willing to figure out how to make a down payment on a herd of cows? What's the most important? Is it having earning assets or those long-term assets that might be slower return, such as real estate? So those are all things we need to kind of think about from the time we're teenagers up through our 20s, and as we make matrimonial decisions, those come into play too. So I think there's opportunities. I really do. And I'd do it again in a heartbeat, to be honest. If I was 20 years old, I'd start farming again, not a doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Charles Crave, our guest, one of the four Crave brothers who farm together at near Waterloo, Wisconsin, hosting the Wisconsin Farm Technology Days July 21st through the 23rd. Take more of your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Charles Crave, our guest today, as we talk about agriculture technology and their farm, the Crave Brothers Farm, where they have anaerobic digestion system that provides enough power to power 500 homes here in Wisconsin. A lot of that, of course, they power their own place, and they power a lot of other homes here in the state. They also produce some wonderful cheese. And we've heard a little bit about that as well. You may have some questions. We've talked about family farming a little bit, too. And you may have some questions and comments. And if you do, join us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. You consider yourself, I mean, you've got to talk about a family operation. You've got all the brothers.
That's right.
And then you've got spouses. And
Yeah, we've got... I counted a couple weeks ago. It's like 11 adult, post-high school family members involved in the operation in one way or the other, either working directly on our payroll or working for one of our suppliers, et cetera, and dealing with our farm. So there's 11 salaries or livelihoods that are coming directly off of our farm.
And family, and those are family members.
Family.
Yeah.
Plus, a multitude of employees.
Yeah. 20 employees, maybe?
Oh, at least on the farm and more than that at the cheese factory. We've had over 100 employees, including family members, over the last three or four years,
yeah. Kevin in Deerfield, we'll go to you now. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning. I'll try not to make my question too complicated, but it's another kind of family farm question, I guess. In Wisconsin, we still have about 13,000 dairy farms, and I think 80% of those still are less than 100 cows. I thought that the dairy industry had shaken out pretty well in the 80s and 90s, and this last decade, things had stabilized a little bit more, although I know that a lot of those 13,000 dairy farms that are under 100 cows remaining, a lot of them won't see another generation, but a lot of them would like to. And you did mention there are some people that are interested in getting into farming and dairy farming today. And I understand the reason for consolidation to a certain extent, synergize resources, the expertise that of one individual that complements another one, and the modern lifestyle that growing and having a larger farm can enable, so that people aren't quite so tied down 365 days a year. But at the same time, I'm an advocate for more farmers, not fewer, and I think I would like to see a lot of those 13,000 dairy farms see another generation. Not everybody is going to be able to do, farmstead cheese, although I think, Governor Doyle has talked about 23 new dairy plants this year, and a lot of those are the farmstead cheese plants. And there's a lot of other value-added things that can be done, but I guess I just would like some perspective on some of the other things. That is it realistic to try to keep dairy farm structure diverse with a number of smaller entities, so that we have more rather than a lot fewer? And what are some of the other ways that can happen, both from a public policy standpoint and a private enterprise standpoint?
Okay. All right. Big question there, Kevin. thanks a lot for calling. That's a lot to chew on, Chuck. So what do you think?
Yeah, it really is. You know, I could detect a certain emotion there, too, because, you know, our livelihoods and our families are all incredibly important to all of us. And I can certainly relate to the discussion there. What can be done? I think we have to start with some of the basics, a certain amount of encouragement, a certain amount of optimism. For instance, if mom and dad are optimistic with their 100-cow herd, then that's going to be spread throughout the family. If mom and dad can make money sometimes, nobody's making money now. But if we can share somewhat of a rewarding lifestyle as a result of our efforts, that's encouraging to the family. If we can share our educational values or our attributes that can help make us a better farmer than our parents and make our son or daughter or our right-hand employee a better farmer than I am, that can be encouraging. So I think we need to kind of take a look at some of the basic things that can encourage, not necessarily the word sustainability, but a certain amount of profitability, certain amount of stewardship, and family values that are positive. Then, as far as policies, golly, I don't know. There's no end to policies. You know, and some folks say, oh, Crave Brothers have had some grants. Yeah, we've taken some grants, but believe me, we've paid into the federal coffers pretty well, too, over time. So I think if grants are available, those things can help to a certain degree. But we have to have that a certain amount of chutzpah, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've had acquaintances who are wonderful people, but if you don't have that perseverance and drive, you know, and it takes a lot of drive. You know, I've been in this farming business since 1978, so it's 31 years, you know, and if you came to me 21 or 11 years ago, I was nowhere prepared to host this show or speak here. So it's a really a long-term venture.
Yeah. Thanks again, Kevin, for calling. I appreciate your call. And I want to turn to an email we got from Michael, who lives in Arcadia, Wisconsin. He says, I've purchased the Crave Brothers fresh mozzarella cheese several times. When I had a concern about some cheese that I purchased, I emailed Chuck, and I got a super quick response. Now I buy their fresh mozzarella exclusively. What great customer service. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks. You didn't email me. You emailed my Fleabag brother or somebody else.
But, you know, that's that customer service, that's all part of this, too.
It really is. You know, we're small enough that we can really provide the customer service, and we've gone to great pains to provide that. Once a product leaves our dock, we've lost control.
Yeah.
But we appreciate hearing from folks like this who may have a concern or whatever the issue may be, because we're working hard to work with our vendors and such to really maintain a good quality product all the way through the table.
And that can be difficult. You're right. You've got a fresh product, and when it leaves the when it leaves your hand, you know, you lost control on it.
That's right. And just those of you who aren't real familiar with fresh mozzarella products, fresh mozzarella is similar to another fresh cheese. And another fresh cheese we have in our refrigerators is cottage cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know if we leave cottage cheese out or we leave it uncovered, pretty soon it doesn't taste like cottage cheese. Mm-hmm. And fresh mozzarella is made in a very fresh, clean environment. So it provides terrific freshness and refreshment. But again, under less than ideal circumstances, it can take on less than ideal cultures.
So you need to work pretty carefully with those distributors and with the retail outlets to make sure that that product stays good.
That's right. Absolutely.
Right to the customer. Michael also wanted to hear more about your manure digester and electrical power generation operation. Can you talk a little more about that?
Sure. We have an agreement with another company called Clear Horizons, and they in turn ended up hiring my son as he was about to graduate from the UW-Madison here with his agricultural degree. And he's the plant manager, and they also have other projects they're working on throughout the country. But that agreement allowed them to put their capital into the manure digester and allowed me to keep my capital into the farming business, which is my core skill level, of course. So we were able to grow the herd and modernize our farmstead so it could handle all the manure into the digester system. Mm-hmm. So that has doubled in size over the last couple of years since it was initially installed. It has a complete programmable operation. So we're very well in tune to what's going on there. This company has also installed a complete monitoring system. So there's no by guess or by golly. It's kind of like having the gauges in your car. If you're a mechanic and you're going down the road and you're looking at 8 or 10 gauges, you really know what's going on, as compared to having a warning light and going into the dealership and said the light came on. So that's where we're at. We've got the complete system in place for incredible operation.
And what I think one of the things about this is because of the system that you've got there, you're producing electricity, but you're also odor issues are...
That's right.
Not there.
No, once manure is digested, those volatile ingredients are removed by the bacteria. So we can actually take our composted manure digestate and spread it on the fields which we farm. Mm-hmm. And there's very, very minimal odor. We can go right behind the high school and have a track meet, and you wouldn't even know that manure was spread 200 yards away.
And another product that you was talking about, somebody mentioned, I think it was Kevin might have mentioned, value added. There's another product that you're coming up for the home gardener, a mulch, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right, where you have a product called Energrow, which is the compost and manure solids. And that product is sold in bags and throughout the landscaping industry. And what that does is provides very biologically sound nutrients that are ready for plant consumption. And part of the neat story about this is when that product was being developed, Clear Horizons went to the University of Wisconsin, and they went to WISIS, which is the equivalent of Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, and they did some research and got some technology off the shelf, and we're using kind of proven technology from the university, just as much as if you fed your rats decon. That's, again, a proven UW breakthrough going back many years, but we're working with the resources that we've already paid for. We're working with the systems that we know will work. So while we might say we have a larger farm and it's a modern farm, that's very true. But we're also trying to capture the incredible knowledge that is already available for all of us.
One other point about that product that you're developing, peat moss, it can replace peat moss, if I'm not mistaken, and there's been some real worries or issues relating to the peat bogs in Canada.
That's right. Yeah, this provides some of the nutrients that you would find in peat moss. It provides organic matter for your soil, and used in a sound manner, it will replace your peat moss.
Let's take another call. Ron in Sparta, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a couple questions for the gentleman there. And I've got relatives who are in different size dairy farms, and I know they always mention their amount they receive for their product. And I guess I'm wondering, do you utilize only your product for your cheese, or do you buy in the open market for your cheese production? And I guess, what is your break even on your milk product per hundredweight?
Well, I'll tell you, I was just in to see our accountant last week, and our break even is a little better than average, but not much. And right now, a lot of the industry's talking $14, $15, $16 a hundredweight to break even. And just for the sake of our listener office, I'm proud to say our farming operation is somewhat down near the lower end of that mm-hmm. spectrum. And we're trying to add some value to it through the cheese business and get a return on our investment there. It's not easy. It's not for the faint of heart. You know, and I'm happy to say, yeah, we're making some money in the cheese. But I can also say, hey, I tied up several million dollars for many years without coming close to breaking even. So it's starting to come around. So a lot of the thought in the industry is, wow, what if we could add value and retain some of it there? And I think we have to really ask ourselves, do we have the management ability? Do we have the family input? I mean, my brother and his wife have worked full-time on this like dogs for the last, since 2002.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gave up her big benefit. I shouldn't say big. She gave up a nice benefit package in town. And some of these factors. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to kind of really take a look. Is this where I want to be? And do I have the resources to put into it? And for instance, if we can't develop an above average crop enterprise, are we going to be able to develop an above average cheese or yogurt enterprise? If our cows are not substantially above average, why would our cheese business be anything the same? There are over 400 varieties of specialty cheese manufactured in Wisconsin. We manufacture 4 or 5 of them. So when we go to the marketplace, the buyer might say, oh, that's a great story. But you know what? I got 396 other people who want my dollar too.
Yeah.
What's going to make you that much better? So it's a real venture. It's the real deal, folks. There's no doubt about it.
Thanks again, Ron, for calling. Pat in Sauk County, will you turn to you next? Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm really excited to come and see the Crave Farm. I've been following them for quite a while in the newspapers. I have a small organic dairy in Sauk County, and frankly, we're really struggling, and I appreciate what you just said about milk prices and the dedication and commitment it takes to decide to go into farming in these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. It's a struggle. I don't care if you're big or small or organic or whatever. With the market where it is, it's a real struggle.
But I would like to think that there's room for all of us as in dairy farming, especially in family farms in Wisconsin. I was just noticing an article in the Wisconsin State Farmer dated June 19th. In fact, I have it in front of me on page 12A. And it's talking about how the state has 48 licenses, permits in front of it to approve for CAFO siting in Wisconsin. And I'm just wondering how you feel about that. And I think part of the whole technology thing is that we've been kind of on a bigger is better roll for a while. And I'm wondering if not only do farmers need to evaluate if they want to farm, but whether society as a whole is going to kind of stop and take stock and decide whether or not our farmland is worth preserving and our family farms are worth preserving.
Yeah,
right. Well, that's a real question. You know, we're a CAFO, and we applied for that, and we were kind of...
What does that mean, by the way? Some people are going to wonder what that means.
Sure, that's a concentrated animal feedlot operation, mm-hmm. which means anything over 1,000 animal units. So if you took a farm with 100 milk cows and his heifers, he would have about 300 animal units, because a CAFO is considered to be a 1,000-pound animal.
Okay.
So if you have... 10-pound turkey, you'd need 100 turkeys, would be one CAFO. All right. So incredible expense going into the CAFO business, just incredible expense, engineering, planning, documentation, et cetera. I think when you mentioned 40-some permits, I think some of those might be catch-up. It might be folks saying, well, you know, we've been at it. We've kind of been sitting on the fence for a while. And now it's time we get our permit. So if we decide to do something larger than what we're at, we'll be up and running. Yeah. I think a CAFO operation has more documentation and has more stewardship practices in place that must be not necessarily better, but they are definitely documented and shared with the employees and management and family than a non-CAFO operation. So, for instance, with ours, we know if we have manure in the summer, it must be piled in a certain place or spread in a certain place at a certain rate, incorporated on certain fields, not incorporated on others, and this information needs to be recorded on a daily or weekly basis. So I think we can somewhat have a fear of a CAFO, but in reality, they have an incredible, incredible track record.
We thanks again, Pat, for calling. I appreciate it. And in the last few minutes here, I want to get back to Farm Technology Days because people want to see your farm operation. Man, that's the time to do it. July 21st through the 23rd, right?
That's right. We're starting at 9 a.m. each of the days and going till later in the afternoon. There'll be a chance to see the farm, the huge tent city, all the exhibitors. There'll be scooters available for those who are handicapped or have a difficult time getting around. There'll be a few shuttle vehicles throughout, like you'd have at the airport that always beep their horn at you. they'll be scooting around. A lot for the whole family to see. So whether you actually come from a farm or not, tremendous opportunities for the whole family.
There's there's family events. There's things for the children to do there. Obviously, to see the whole farm operation. And somebody was wondering about where you're located. Well, and we should mention that where the farm's located.
Right. We're just a few miles northeast of Waterloo, Wisconsin, which is 20 miles northeast of Madison, where our farm is in Dodge County. If you go to wisconsinfarmtech.com, you'll find out all the information there.
Yep, dodgefarmtech.com, www.dodgefarmtech.com. And you can find out everything you need to know about Farm Technology Days and how to get there. Chuck, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank the folks who called in with some real heartfelt questions.
Thank you. Charles Crave, one of the four Crave brothers who farm together at Waterloo, hosting that Wisconsin Farm Technology Days July 21st through the 23rd. And again, for directions and for more information, go to www.dodgefarmtech.com, dodgefarmtech.com. You're going to find out everything you need to know about. This is a very small amount of money to go. I think it's like $5. So it's a very reasonable entree into some really high-tech farming. Appreciate it very much. We'll be talking about some other high-tech things, hybrid vehicles. We'll talk about diesel. We'll talk about fuel technologies. Glenn Bauer is back to visit with us, senior scientist in mechanical engineering at the UW-Madison College of Engineering. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.